with no power. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who is recording the intro to this podcast in a very dark room. I'm Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rob Has a Podcast. This is not the way that I envisioned opening up this show today. I am here in Southern California, and we have our power off. I'm not sure if it's because of the wildfires or the wind, exactly what the reason is, but we've been without power here for the entire afternoon, and it is now the evening, and I want to make sure that you guys have a podcast to listen to on Friday. And I don't know when the power is going to be back up. So I needed to record an intro for this podcast. And that's what you're listening to right now. I spoke with Coach earlier today, had a lot of fun. Coach is shot out of a cannon and really excited to talk to us about the things he's seeing in this season. And so I hope you guys enjoy my interview with Coach, which is coming up in just a moment. We are also going to have Kellen Bechtold on the feedback show coming up later on this weekend. So make sure you get your feedback questions in before I throw it to my interview with Coach. Of course, I have an exit interview, which was also just went up with Tom Laidlaw from earlier today. But I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Figs. And what Figs does is they create great looking medical apparel for nurses, doctors, dentists, and people who work in medicine and healthcare. They are going to be looking great when they check out Figs. What these amazing people do every day is more than a job, and what they wear is more than a uniform. So shouldn't they wear scrubs that help them feel good and perform their best? Figs is an amazing company that is making scrubs stylish, finally, and functional for the people that deserve it most. For years, nurses like the First Lady of Podcasting, doctors, dentists, other awesome medical professionals, they were forced to wear scratchy and ill-fitting scrubs. Why? Why should they have to? Not when there's Figs, because with Figs, they are antimicrobial, protecting you from germs and bacteria, ridiculously soft, moisture-wicking, and they feature a four-way stretch, which is so much superior to a two-way or a three-way stretch. Figs are made with yoga waistbands, perfect for Nora, and they come in a variety of styles from classic straight legs to joggers and skinny styles too. Figs gives back as well. Every time you shop at Figs, they give their scrubs to healthcare providers in need around the world through their Threads for Threads initiative. And speaking of Figs, Figs makes a great gift for the lifesavers in your life too. Figs gift cards are available as well. So if you're one of the awesome humans that works in healthcare or someone that wants to say thanks to these deserving folks, Figs is going to make this easy by providing you with a 15% off your first purchase using the code RHAP. Get ready to love your scrubs. Head to WearFigs, that's WearFigs.com, and enter the promo code RHAP at checkout. That's WearFigs.com, promo code RHAP. All right, so that's going to do it for me in the dark room. Here is my interview with Coach from earlier today. Hope you enjoy it.
I just popped open a bottle of kombucha, organic, okay. Bing Z probiotic, authentic. Real premium. Doesn't that just describe me right there? Why didn't you catch that on there, man? Start recording. Let's go.
Okay, we're good. We're rolling. And I'm so excited to talk to a man who I have been talking to for many years on Rob as a Podcast. Here he is back with us. The three-time survivor, the legend, the one and only Coach. Coach, how are you?
Boom. Bushmaster.
Yes. Thank you, Coach. Thank you. And I'm excited to talk to you about everything that's going on in...
Guess what I'm drinking right now.
Is it a kombucha?
It's a kombucha. Please pronounce it correctly. And on the bottle, it says authentic, real, premium. Three words that describe the Dragon Slayer. And then it's got a little fun vocab of the day. Zoetic. Which means of and relating to life. At some time during this podcast, I am going to slip in the word zoetic.
Zoetic. I never heard that word before.
Me neither. It's on the bottle. Zoetic. Of and relating to life. I will use that in the podcast today.
Okay. Coach, I looked this up and that the famous treadmill podcast that you and I did, that was exactly 9 years ago this week, October 22nd, 2010. That was the first time that you and I really ever spoke.
I would like to apologize again for diminishing your skills by distracting myself by being on the treadmill. But I got to tell you, I snuck in a workout this morning before work, and I was thinking about the infamous treadmill podcast.
No, I think it's legendary at this point. And that was in the very early going of it was the first year of the podcast. And it gives us something to remember even 9 years later.
Love it. Love it.
Okay. Coach, I know that you are watching this season closely, as you are every season. And so we have this theme of the Island of the Idols where we've brought back Rob and Sandra to be, much like you, a coach to the players. Do you like this idea?
What was that? Did you have the question? First of all, let me correct you. You said I'm watching this season closely. Let's change the adjective closely to, or is that an adverb? That's an adverb. Let's change closely to barely.
Barely?
I'm barely hanging on to this season, man. I'll tell you, I might be in the minority, and that's totally fine. I know that there's a lot of ass kissers out there that love to just soak up whatever Sandra and Rob tweet out there. Hey, hi, guys. 6,000 likes. Yo, 15,000 likes. Hey guys, just wanted to say I'm sunning myself like. So people soak up what they're laying down and that's totally fine. I don't have to kiss anybody's ass because first of all, who knows if I'm even going to go back on Survivor. We can get to that later. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, it's just freaking boring, man. It's crazy. I am really not a fan of this season. Jeff Probst calls tomorrow and says, hey, coach, you want to come out and be on another Island of the Idols? The answer is, oh, hell yeah, I'll go out there. I'll take $100,000 and sit and bask in the sun and quote unquote live in the elements and actually gain weight while I'm out there. But besides that, I'm going to give it to you the real truth why this season is really bothering me. Okay. And I've been holding it bottled up. Ready to explode.
Like that kombucha.
Over the last 2 weeks. Exactly. Like this kombucha. I should just shake it up. If I weren't at work, I'd shake it up and see if I could get it to explode on the phone. Anyway, here's the deal. I've been keeping this under my hat. It's really been bothering me. So what is the one question that every single contestant and fan wonders before they go out on the show or before they meet a real contestant? There's one theme and thread that everybody is thinking about every single Survivor episode. And it is the most frequently asked question of all of us that have been on Survivor. And that is,
where do you go to the bathroom?
Very close. Hey man, is there a toilet paper? Is there a porta potty? How real is it? Hey man, is it scripted? Hey, is it real? I mean, are you guys like really, is there an outhouse out there? Are they slipping you guys power bars before the challenges? Not that anybody even eats power bars anymore. That's a throwback to my professional kayaking sponsor days. But anyway, I'll get about 10 cases of power bars for throwing that in there. Not really. So here's the thing. It is the authenticity of the show. And I've got to tell you that when I went out there and it was the first day, nobody cares about Token Jeans anymore.
Yes,
so I'm bringing
up
old school. I get out there the first day of Token Jeans. We hike for 8 hours. We could become severely dehydrated. We have absolutely no water. I literally almost get heat stroke, and they almost pulled me out of the game. Matt Van Wagner was walking with us, and he said, I turned deathly white. And he says, Coach, are you okay? Do I need to call a medic? And I'm like, I'm fine. And the world was spinning around. We get to camp, spend the night. The next day, no water. Go to the challenge. It's 125 degrees or whatever Probst announced on camera, 123, whatever it is. And I'm thinking to myself, as a coach, this is unsafe. Where's the water? Mm-hmm. They're going to stop rolling the cameras and they're going to bring out the water and the granola bars. And then we'll get a little bit of energy in us because there's no way humanly possible that we should be out here doing this. Just from a pure safety standpoint, on your marks, get set, contestants ready, go. And we're sprinting over the hills. And I'm thinking, WTF, this is as real as it gets. There is no bathroom. There is no toilet paper. There are no retakes in Survivor. Most people don't realize that. If they don't catch it on camera, then they don't get it. And they get pissed. and they get pissed at the grips and the light people and the camera guys and the assistant producers and the producers, and everybody gets pissed at the lowest man on the totem pole who's out there that didn't catch something on film. But it is as real and unscripted as it gets. And I remember talking afterward, once I'd gotten voted out, and I was talking to some of the people that worked on there, Michael Matsumoto and Matt Van Wagden, and I just said, man, this was just so authentic. And they said, we pride ourselves in Survivor being the pinnacle of reality TV shows where we script nothing. It's as real as it gets. So now, here is the answer to your question. The thing that bothers me the most about this season is that Rob and Sander are so scripted that I can't even stand it. I remember going back to casting. I'm going all over the place. I remember going back to casting, and Noel Kane looks me in the eyes before my first big interview with Probst, Matt Van Wagner, and all the producers. And she looks at me, and I kind of get introverted before I go on stage or before I'm about ready to perform. And she looks at me and she was like, hey, I need you to get up for this. This could be your one chance. And I said, stop it. And she looked at me and she saw this fire smoldering in my eyes. And she was like, oh, shit. And I was like, that's right. Don't ever talk to me again before I go into an interview. You don't ever have to get me pumped up for an interview. And I went in there and I just friggin' waylaid those guys. And they were taking notes by the end of the interview. That's a true story on my life. They were sitting there taking notes. And I said, this is my game. And this is how I roll. You don't ever have to get me pumped up. And so if I were out there and the producers were to say, hey, tomorrow let's have a fire making, I'd say, shut it. I don't want to hear anything. I want everything to be completely unscripted. Give me a clue. We can break the urn together, and then I'll give them coach lessons for life. I'll tell you this. I would do a hell of a lot of a better job than any of those people out there, from Rob and Sander to the producers, to give those guys better lessons on how to win in life, win at Survivor. Because, you know, people ask me all the time that never watch the show, hey, coach, did you win? I said, yep, I won 3 times. They're like, no shit, you won 3 times? Absolutely, because winning in Survivor is not the litmus test. Winning in Survivor is playing a season and being remembered more than almost any of the other characters for that season. That's what winning Survivor is. And so I'll teach them the real game in Survivor, and I will teach them the real game in life. But what disappoints me the most, and then I'll take a breath and you can ask me your next question or dialogue on what I've said. I am literally vitriolic at the fact that, oh, Sandra's looking at Rob. Hey, I've never made fire in my life, but let me give lessons on how to give a fire making challenge. And Rob's like, here's how you go, you know, incognito to the other team. And they've never even done it. And so it's so scripted and it's so canned that it completely ruins the show for me. And to look at the amount of times, go back and look at the last few episodes. Let's see how many times Rob says a sentence, and let's see how many times we see Sandra looking stupidly at Rob, wondering what she should do and what clues she should take from. At least Boston Rob is going to give us some wisdom. Hey, by golly, he wrote a book that was self-published and bandied about and promoted by Jeff Probst on the finale. I mean, it must have sold, you know, 2,000 copies. So he must be an expert. Anyway, I'm done. Next question.
So are you saying that you feel like that Rob and Sandra are too shackled by production and that we need to let Rob and Sandra be Rob and Sandra? Is that the issue?
I think that is a big part of the issue. But there's also another part of the issue. When you're out there and you are not really surviving, if you're getting every reward challenge that the other tribe is getting, right? Every tribe's getting it. They're not losing weight, man. They're not really surviving out there. So the detoxification that your body that goes through, the heightened senses and awareness of your mind that acutely get better as you are out there surviving for your life. It feels like that in the moment. You know that, even though we're not really going to die. And so all that is taken away from us. We don't have that now. We have a couple of fat cats, no pun intended, that are sitting there laying on the beach, probably bored out of their mind. I'm sure they've got some type of stimulus. And, you know, it's like very, very much like watching a bad sitcom, that moment of it. And then that kind of spoils it for the rest of the time. Last night's episode was better because we only saw Sandra, agreeing with Rob and them getting their, you know, 5 seconds of airtime in that little hut that they're in. And so it was better because that part was minimized. So script it less, let them do what they need to do, let them starve. Let's say this, how about this? How about if they give bad advice or if they don't coach that person to do the task that they should do, like in Nora's case, guess what? They're kicked off the island and they bring in two more idols. Boom.
Wow. Okay. So you want to make it a game for Rob and Sandra too, that they've got two other people waiting in the wings. They've got a giant head that they're going to unveil. And if they fail their mission, then they get kicked off.
Exactly. Why not? I mean, here's the thing. I would say that production can do whatever they want to do. Okay. So why not make it interesting? Why not bring the game to everybody that's out there? It just makes it so that it's less authentic.
Okay.
Survivor, as you know, needs to be zoetic.
So, yes. Boom. There you go. Always needs to be zoetic. Now, as far as the players go this season, do you feel like that in some way they're being robbed of the Survivor experience by being coached? Like, do you feel like that they need to experience this firsthand and not have these mentors that are out there?
No, I mean, I do like that part of it. I mean, I think that, you know, when I first did Survivor, I filmed like a pilot for a reality show called The Way of the Warrior. And it was basically the premise of getting people when they're at their lowest and then building them up and having them make correct life decisions. And so it was kind of, you know, it wasn't based on Survivor, but it was a little bit of the fact that what I saw in Survivor is that when people are at their weakest, you encourage them to lie, cheat, and steal. And I think that has long-term ramifications in real life, but that's just a little surmise on myself. So, you know, I mean, I like the fact that they're being coached. Does it lessen the experience? If we did it every year, then it would definitely lessen the experience. But, you know, this is a one-off or two-off or four-off, and I think it's cool. I do like the fact that they're trying new things. It's just that they have eroded the true foundation of what their show is all about, and that is unscripted reality TV.
Because you were in a similar position when you came back for South Pacific, similar to what Rob had gone through on the season before, where that you were looked at as this mentor figure for a cast of new players, and you didn't have a lesson plan.
That is correct. I did not. I was thrown into the lion's den with the true hero, Ozzy, and I was going to look like a chump if I didn't scramble and make some changes and make people get to know the real coach.
Yeah. And you were in a much different circumstance because you were competing with those other players also, not just being able to just give them the, tricks of the trade.
That's true. I probably told you this last time, but when I got done with South Pacific, I talked to Jeff one-on-one. Actually, it was before the finale, leading up to the finale. And I talked to him just, you know, face to face. And I was just like, he was like, it was a good run for you. You know, did you have a good time? I said, yeah. I mean, like all my days on Survivor, this is what I really, you know, this was like the pinnacle of it. And then I said, you know, let me ask you a question, Jeff. Well, do you think I should do this again? I think I should go out here and do Survivor again. And he said, he looked for a second and he's really smart, as you know. I mean, he doesn't miss anything. And he said, you know, as a friend, I would say no, because you're never going to get it better than this. As a producer and a host, I'd like you to be out here every single season. But as a friend, you had a great run. You mentored your tribe from day one. You had an incredible influence on their lives inside and outside of the game. And, you know, you can see that resonating in every episode and also in your relationships with these people in real life. And so, you know, having that chance to go from the bottom and get onto the top and to lead and to motivate and challenges and to do all that kind of stuff, it was really cool. I really enjoyed that. So, yes, I did not have the luxury of knowing that I wasn't going to get voted out. But I think that changes things, right? Anytime that we're under pressure, and look, let's face it, as much as I'm slagging Rob and Sandra off, obviously they're good players. Okay. And obviously they know the game better strategically than me. When we were sitting there at that podcast, the know-it-alls, and you and I were talking, and I just looked at you like, I don't get the game on this level. I am not a strategic player. I am a different type of player. So obviously, Rob and Sandra know the game better than me strategically. And I think that that's something maybe in the future that they bring to the table. Somebody that knows the game strategically and somebody that knows the game coach emotionally. And so you have the yin and the yang out there on Island and the Idol. So maybe they're giving them two different strategies, two different ways to approach things.
Who would be the perfect person to complement what you would bring to the table as a coach for these players?
Well, I think that you'd have to have a girl and a guy, right? I mean, that's going to work best, male and a female. And you look at one of the best, you know, strategic players in the game, that would be Parvati. And so I would say Parvati and myself would be a good yin and yang out there.
Okay. All right.
You could talk about the strategics, and I could talk about the life lessons that we could learn out there.
Coach, let me ask you about this vote from this week's episode that you had the people that were from the original Vokai tribe. They had to make a decision. They had three options between Tom, Dean, and Karishma. They went with Tom. Do you think that that was the right decision to vote Tom out of the group?
I thought that was an amazing job of editing. I said to my wife, it can't be Krishna or Karishma, because Even Propes is slacking her off during the challenges. Oh, and Krishma's struggling on this one. And oh, she's the last on this one, even so much that she quit back to him. Jap, that's just not true, or whatever she said. So I was thinking, if there is, I mean, either it's just ridiculously obvious that she's going home, or you know, there's just a whole lot of smokescreen here so that we think it's going to be her. Obviously, Tom was not great in confessionals, and so we weren't really able to see any type of final edit for his last episode, which actually made it a better episode, because you just thought, you know, how in the world could Karishma, you know, not be going home tonight? It's so far away from the merge. People think merge too soon. And, you know, here's the thing, right? The strongest players in challenges, it so very rarely works out that somebody that is that good in challenges is able to win every immunity. And the immunities are, yes, they're endurance, but they're puzzles and they're this and they're that. I mean, whoever would have thought that Sophie was going to beat Ozzy head to head in the last one was because Sophie was a better athlete than Ozzy? No, it's because she was better in puzzles. Mm-hmm. So I feel like people prematurely get the strongest or the stronger players out before the merge. They start thinking about it. And I do feel like this, I feel like this season, whether it's, you know, just my take on it, but I do feel like there's a little bit more loyalty in this season. There has been, you know, some pretty cutthroat survivor the last four or five seasons, six seasons, seven seasons. And so I feel like now that it's actually a little bit more loyal. I know that, you know, Missy is pretty cutthroat and she's like, I got no more loyalty. But Tom was definitely loyal and we could see that. I thought it was a really good conversation that he had with the lifeguard. What's her name?
Janet.
Janet. And so, you know, that was a good conversation. Actually, my little sixth sense came up when she was like, you know, he's loyal, and at the merge, he's probably going to go back to those people. I immediately started calculating how many people were on the other tribe from Tom's original tribe. And so that kind of made me think, it might be. I obviously would want to win challenges. I mean, that's the thing, right? You're out there day to day. And of course, everybody's thinking about day 39. But at the same time, you're thinking about the next reward challenge, and you're thinking about the next immunity challenge. And anything can happen in tribal council. So why not just keep your tribe strong? I understand, right? Vokai is thinking, oh, we got the numbers. So even if we lose a challenge and we have to come back, we can vote off one of them. We still have two more people of cushion before we get to ourselves. And then probably then we're going to merge. But that's just not the game. That's not the way that I play survive. Keep the strongest, vote out the weakest, win challenges.
Mm-hmm. Iron sharpens iron.
Boom.
Yeah. So let me ask you some questions as we have them from our listeners. Andrew Shadlock says, what tactic did Coach use to persuade Cochran to flip in South Pacific? And did you see anybody working that way on trying to get members of the Lero tribe to flip over on either side last night?
That's a good question. It just was real. I just looked at the situation, you know, nine times out of 10, I'm not going to be able to flip somebody, but I was trying to flip Cochrane on a human level and seeing Cochrane sleeping outside the shelter, sleeping in the sand, watching the way that his tribe treated him, that offended me. And so as I told him, I said, look, you can vote with your old tribe, but know that this is a safe place for you. Know that we will value you. And our tribe did. We were a different tribe. We were very humanistic and, we genuinely wanted to care about people out there. And I think that the other tribe they had a different vibe. So anyway, it was just on a very human, real element. They're treating you like garbage. We're going to treat you as an equal. So come over with us and share our food, and we're not going to get pissed at you if we lose a challenge. Obviously it was, more individual immunity at this point, but we wouldn't have done that anyway. And they were really, jumping on him whenever they lost. Even when we lost that final challenge, they were yelling at Cochrane. So it was more on a humanistic level. Obviously, you're trying to find those ties that bind you. And there was a number of ways that people were able to bond. Janet and Tom, they bonded kind of as an older, more loyal-based tie. Unfortunately, that was what sunk Tom's ship. But I definitely think that you're reaching for friendship or, lo and behold, people that you've known in the past. That was actually really cool. I read something this morning that Jeff Probst didn't have, he had no idea that that guy's ex-girlfriend was friends with. That was pretty crazy when Dean said that. I was like, all right, that's several degrees of separation or whatever the saying goes. So anyway, you're looking for anything to try to find people that you can bond with to try to flip them.
Yeah. Do you think that same sort of thing that you saw with how Cochrane was treated by Savai, that's how Karishma is being viewed by the people from the original Vokai?
Yeah. And I feel like, this sounds bad, right? Because I'm just playing Monday morning quarterback, but I feel like in a little way that she deserves it. But I don't know the dynamics that are going on out there. Mm-hmm. So, when I see her cut her hand and lay on the floor bleeding, how much of that is editing? And, she's like, nobody's helping me. And I was like, that whole thing was really weird. But then she showed up with a huge bandage on her hand. So obviously that was, some of that was authentic. And so she is ostracized by her tribe. But she is, I don't know what value she brings out there. I felt like Cochrane brought value. He was witty. He was, trying to ingrain himself in the tribe, but was he great at challenges? I don't think he was horrible, but I think the thing about Karishma, and my wife said this last night, it's not that she's bad at challenges. It looks like she doesn't care. Mm-hmm. And it looks like she can't push herself past any type of threshold. I used to tell my players, my college soccer players, that this is your boundaries. This is where your peak is right here. And it's my job to blow you through those boundaries and to push you through those plateaus that you hit in life. And so I feel like she has no capability to push herself beyond what she thinks is her normal boundaries. Another question that everybody always asks about me being on Survivor is they'll say, I don't know how you did it. How did you do it? Well, it's easy. If you went out there, you'd do it too. No, I could never do it. Yes, you could. The human body is capable of great things when we're forced into certain situations. And so, I think that she doesn't even look like she's trying. She doesn't look like she really cares.
Now, for Karishma, she has certainly benefited from playing anybody but me. It seems like any of these votes that she's up for, whoever, anybody on the tribe wants to go for. And it feels like that she's set up here for potentially a Sandra-esque run where she's either going to run out of time before we get to the merge, just like when Sandra could have been, it was either going to be Sandra or Courtney. She could have been voted off before the merge in Heroes versus Villains. And then she's the one who made it to the merge. And then she went all the way to the end. Do you think that is the two likely outcomes for Karishma? Either she ends up getting voted off right before the merge or she'll be around to the end?
Hey, look at that, man. We might see her on season 45 of Island of the Idols, how to win challenges. She can give advice on how to win challenges.
Maybe, coach. So do you think that Karishma is going to be around for the long haul then?
Who the hell knows, man? I hope she gets voted off next.
Yeah.
I hope half this cast gets voted off next, man. It's freaking Snoozeville with some of these people. I see people posting, oh, this is the most dynamic cast ever. Oh, my gosh.
Why? Who else?
It's
who
not
else?
The most dynamic cast ever. Give me a break.
Who else is not your favorite right now?
Dude, really, when you were like, hey, so Dean Kowalski is now going to be Detective Dean Kowalski. Did that really inspire anybody? Was that really on? No, that wasn't on. We heard two confessionals total the entire season with Tom. I like Aaron. Aaron is laying it down. I think he reminds me a lot of Albert, but just much better in confessionals. His mannerisms remind me of Albert.
Yeah.
From South Pacific.
Okay.
Vince, you know, gone before he was even a thing. Karishma, okay, whatever. We already talked about her. Elaine, I think Elaine is, I mean, everybody really likes her. I think she's okay. Not great, mm-hmm. but I think she's, oh, in my opinion. Lauren, how many confessionals have we heard out of her? Janet, she finally talked this last time, hadn't heard anything out of her. Kelly, boring. Jason, actually, I like Jason. He reminds me of the Bushmaster a little bit. Jack, how many times have we heard Jack say anything? Have we heard one confessional from Jack this year?
Not recently.
And then we get to Nora.
Yes. Tell me about Nora.
You want to talk about Nora?
Yes.
You want to talk about people comparing her to me? I saw some of those people. You know, Rob C has so much pull on social media. He just throws something up the day of a podcast and there's, you know, 60 to 80 comments within, 15 minutes. But I saw some people saying, oh, hey, does Coach think, you know, hey, is he like Nora? Da, 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 da. You want to talk about that right now?
Yes, please.
Let me give you the perfect segue. Here we go. So I really, first of all, the fact that people talk about me, okay, that's great. But, and the fact that people talk about, you know, Philip Shepherd and Debbie Warner and now Nora and hey, Coach, you know, these people are like playing like you. No, imitation is the finest form of flattery. So I appreciate that people think that, but you're talking about complete nutbirds. And if you look at me on Survivor, let's just say nutty scene, people think when I gave that final poem at the final tribal. Thank goodness I did, because I got my ass voted out right after. But it was like in my mind, I thought, I need to say a poem at tribal council. And it was, you know, obviously very apropos, but I said that poem. It was very serious, but I gave it with a little bit of brevity and smiling. And it was a great moment. And, you know, to come up with a poem like that off the cuff and recite it and it rhymed and the whatever they call it, the meter and the syntax and everything was kind of on point. It almost sounded like an old haiku poem, but I digress. So, I mean, but you know, you look at that stuff like I was serious. I'm going to imitate Nora in tribal council last night. I mean, I'm sorry. She's crazier than a loon. How does that compare to me? When somebody was talking to me and I just started interrupting them and saying, hey, no, I'm going to do this. Like,
yeah,
that doesn't make any sense. And so it's interesting. I think that people are trying to grasp at the former Coach glory and to hope that somewhere along the line, somebody's going to come and replace the greatness of the Dragon Slayer. And fortunately for me, there's been a bunch of Cochrans. Love Cochran. He's an original. Christian comes along. You know, all these guys come along now that are like, you know, very similar to Cochran. There's been a million Aussies with Joe and Malcolm, same kind of thing. So these people that are typecast, they are very easy to be patterned after. There's only one Coach. I'm going to tell you that right now. It's like Beethoven. Great quote. Beethoven was the first composer that said, it's going to be about the music and it's going to be about me. And one time he was playing for this royalty and for the king and queen, and they were talking while he was playing. He slams down the keyboard and he walks off stage, and his friend, Prince Lichnowsky, runs after him and says, Beethoven, you can't do that. They could kill you, because, of course, back in those days, you know, we're talking about the late 1700s, the monarch still had a boatload of power. There was no checks and balances like there is today in most countries. And so Lichnowsky says, Beethoven, you can't do that. And Beethoven says, my friend, let me tell you something. There have been hundreds of princes and there will be thousands and more, but there is only one Beethoven. So I can say that about Coach, because a lot of people are going to try to imitate me. Maybe these people aren't trying to imitate me. But the more the show goes on, the more fortunate I feel, because there's nobody out there that can really replicate what I laid down out there. And so there's really no comparison.
Do you feel like that the biggest difference between you and, say, Anora is when you're out there, you're saying and doing things that you know are going to land with the audience, whereas that for Anora, there's not really intention in some of the things that she's doing on the show. She's just being Anora.
Exactly. I mean, whether you loved it or hated it, I mean, I was out there for a higher calling. Right. Mm-hmm. I was out there for a higher purpose. I was out there to challenge myself. I was out there to hopefully sharpen people and make them better. I get it. People don't want to be better on Survivor. I get that now. But I'm out there to make my little corner of the world better, and to do it through adversity and, you know, living circumstances that are sometimes beyond imagination. And so, you know, there was that higher calling for me to try to change the game and to try to sharpen iron and to try to, you know, to be an original. I feel like Nora's just, you know, Nora. There's no, you know, there's two types of madness, as Nietzsche said. You know, my type of madness is what Nietzsche referred to when he says that there is, what is that quote? Man, I can't think of it off the cuff, but it basically is that there's always reason in madness. Oh, there's madness in love, but there's always reason in madness. I love that. So I feel like there's always reason in my madness. And for Nora, you know, just steamrolling over Boston Rob and laughing incessantly and just being, I mean, the way that she handled that, you know, almost advantage was, you know, that's crazy. So, you know, it really bad. And so I just think that we're just on two different wavelengths.
Let me ask you a question that's from John Radich about the idols. When it comes to idols, it seems like everyone is keeping them secret for as long as possible. But when Coach played the idol, he used it to bond a group together. For the player with the idol, is it more beneficial to keep it hidden or reveal it in an attempt to build trust? We've seen a couple of people this season go out of the game with idols in their pocket. Everybody's keeping these idols a secret. Is that a mistake, Coach?
You know, I don't know. I think that if you're aware and savvy enough in the game that you have a handle on what's going on, one person at least that you can trust that's going to tell you that it's going to be your head on the chopping block, it's okay to keep the idols to yourself. For me, it was something that was, you know, very bonding. I think actually one of Russell's, you know, underplayed, you know, moments was when he gave his idol to everybody else. If you show an idol and you share that idol, you know, I think that's what got him to the end. But you share it and you really make people feel like it's vested, then I think that that's, you know, that's really important. And I think that he did that really well. It's one of the undervalued parts of his game, I think.
Yeah, because I think that it just scares people where that they're almost afraid to vote for you because you have the idol, mm-hmm. and they end up looking for a target right. That's a softer target to hit.
Exactly.
And if they have their, you know, ducks in a row, yeah, sure, they can split the vote. But the way that everybody is so paranoid, I do think that that makes it harder and harder to do on Survivor because everybody is afraid of somebody flipping and somebody making a big move. So you have to have complete confidence in the group. And as we've seen in this season, it's not always the case that you can do that with a bigger group.
Yes, exactly. And I think it always depends, right? For me, I think that I want to build trust out there. I want to have at least one person that I can really trust. I think I've tried to find that on each season, is to find one person that I can really trust. And when you have that one person, it does make the game a lot more comfortable. And so, you know, to have Albert and Sophie, well, I had a bunch the last season that I played. But even on Heroes and Villains, you know, to have somebody that you could trust, I had, you know, I felt like I could trust Jerry. I knew I could trust Tyson. Just wasn't in the cards for me that season. The time before that, I trusted Tyson. And so that makes it more comfortable. And it makes you want to share when you find something out there. Like if you win a reward, you want to share that with other people. You find an idol, you want to share that with your closest allies.
Coach, I know a lot of the fans will want to hear you talk about, what'd you think of the Applebee's reward that the survivors got last night?
Well, the fact that people ask about the Jack and Jill reward is so, I mean, that's like true fandom right there.
Yes. Ryan Kaiser asks, would Coach rather have won the Applebee's reward instead of the Jack and Jill screening?
Yeah, that's true. That's true fandom right there. You know what? The Jack and Jill was, we ate popcorn. Not a lot of substance there. Movie sucked ass. However, it was a break from the game and therefore we loved it. Would I have rather had Applebee's? I do not eat Applebee's in the United States. I think it's a sub-rate food chain. No money from royalties coming on that one, guys. But I definitely, out there, it would taste like the most extravagant filet mignon in the universe. And the shrimp would have been amazing. So, yeah, I wanted that. I would have wanted that reward like crazy. Absolutely.
Right. Should more restaurants be advertising on Survivor? Because the reaction that you're going to get from the survivors, I mean, you could take the worst restaurant in the United States and then have a reward on Survivor and the survivors are going to go crazy.
Hey, there's not one person out there that knew what a freaking shark blue, whatever.
Shark ball.
But I'll tell you what. What is it called?
Shark ball.
Hey, but you know what? I want to go out and have one tonight. If there was an Applebee's in this town, I'd be going out to Applebee's tonight just to check it out.
Just to go check it out. Yeah, I think there's a gummy shark on there.
That was hilarious. And it's got a gummy shark on the top. That'll sell you. Absolutely. Red dye number 40 in that shark right there. Let's eat some more of that. Hey, I do want to say this before we get to some more questions. I wanted to round out the cast. Let me finish the cast.
Okay.
We kind of got into a train wreck on Nora. I think Tommy's okay. You know, he's just trying to play the game. He's going to be a good player that at the end of the season, everybody probably forgets about. I think Dan, when I first saw Dan, I'm probably going to get, raked over the coals for this. But when I first saw Dan, I was like, geez, that guy seems like a little bit like a creeper. And then, of course, you have Jamal. That's my man right there. Jamal. People need to be talking about this guy. I love him. I mean, the wisdom that he was spouting about being in the moment and the things that will happen when you go and just exist in the moment. Dude, that was like, that was like Dragon Slayer-esque exile. And I got to tell you, man, he is very well spoken. But the things that he says, and I think because he says it just very matter-of-factly, that maybe you don't catch what he's saying when he first says it, but I bet that you could go back and watch episodes and it would be like reading a good book when the second time that you read it, you're still picking out different, pearls of wisdom that you didn't see the first time.
Yeah.
I'd say that would be the same. That would be the same for Jamal. He's definitely my absolute favorite contestant on this season.
I'm glad you brought that up because I've also been really enjoying Jamal. I pulled the quote that he had last week where he talked about how he was not treating himself with grace. And I do think that he does have there's a poetry to what he's saying. And I love that you picked that up as well.
Yep. Loved it.
Yeah. So, I'm very happy that Jamal has been able to stick around so far in this game after he was on the ropes early on. How far do you think Jamal could go?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's so self-aware and, I think that he's also very much not withdrawn, but he's very much in control. It's going to be interesting to see how long his self-control holds up because obviously when you don't get sleep and you're hungry and you start to get, broken down, that you can start, being more irritable or you can lose your rationale. I think if he remains calm and self-disciplined, that he's going to go far. I definitely think he's a sleeper of this season.
Coach, let me ask you a question from one of our listeners, Nathan on Twitter, wanted to know, curious to hear your thoughts on your noble strategy of taking the most worthy to the end with honor, integrity, etc. Is this impossible in modern Survivor?
I thought there was going to be a second part of that question that was going to drop the hatchet on me for cutting Ozzy. But anyway, I'm glad that wasn't the question. I've answered that question so many times. I don't know, man. I'm in a conundrum. I feel like my future worth on Survivor is very high, but I feel that going back and playing another time is going to be really difficult because the game has evolved. The game was above my head when I first started playing it, just in terms of strategy and backstabbing and that kind of stuff. And I feel like now it's at a whole new level. Is it possible to go out there and win with honor and integrity, bring the strongest players to the end? I feel like it was possible. I feel like if JT had gone with me and, you know, like he, me and Tyson at the end, or, you know, even, you know, Debbie, whatever, even Steven, you know, Steven definitely overcame more than anybody else out there on that season to survive in an atmosphere where it was not comfortable for him. And so he progressed more as a man than anybody else. So even if it had been the three of us at the end, I feel like that would have been the moment to turn the tables. But instead, we took a detour, you know, went the opposite direction. And, you know, now I think it's not impossible. Nothing is impossible, but I feel like it's virtually impossible, you know, when people are just stabbing their friends in the back out there to get ahead. And I think a little bit of it is, you know, production. And I can totally understand it. When I watched the end of South Pacific, that was a very boring ending because we knew what was going to happen. And so I feel that, you know, producers want to spice things up. They don't want things to become predictable. And I totally get it. We said Edna was six. Edna goes out at six. You know, it's like, here goes five, here goes four. And Ozzy's back on, but now he's going back off. And so it became really predictable to have that pogong. So I can understand producers wanting to mix things up and to keep things spicy, but you know that they're out there saying, you got to have big mood. You got to have a resume. You got to have a resume to get to the end and to win at the end. You know that they're saying that. And so I feel like they are subtly shifting the game as well to put it in these players' heads that, hey, don't be comfortable out here. I mean, look, I mean, I guess I'm in the minority, but I would imagine in my own deluded state that everybody would really want to go out on Survivor, have a great adventure, build a cool shelter, survive, test your body, test your wits, have challenges, you know, and really just have a great time in an environment where you found your five or you found your three, you promote loyalty, you get those players to the end, you beat the other team, old school, and then gloves are off and you fight it out to the final three and you try to win at the end. But it's a comfortable experience because you're not thinking your best friend's going to stab you in the back. And then when he does, then you have to go back and work with them. And then if you stab somebody in the back, then you're going to go back to them because you got to work with them. And that person says, well, I'll work with you for this one vote. And then after that, who knows? I mean, to me, that's got to be one of the most unsettling experiences that you could possibly have in an unsettling environment.
Now, just to bring this back to where you started, where you were asked, how many times have you won the game or how did you do on your three times that you played? And you said you won every single time because you were one of the people that was remembered from your season. I think that for a lot of people that go out there, that they are not capable of having these character moments, which causes people to remember them. And I think that for a lot of people, what they're most afraid of is being on the show and not having anything that gets shown. And so one way to make sure that you get shown week after week is to be somebody who is an architect of these moves that are constantly happening on the show. And I think that that's a big part of it for a lot of players, where you feel like, hey, I can stick with my group and I'm going to be on this show every single week because of the stuff that I'm giving them. But not everybody can come out there and do what you're able to do on camera, Coach.
That's interesting. I think the opposite, right? I mean, it's easier to control your own destiny than to control those destinies around you. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you can control who you are, right? Be responsible for your own actions. Only you are responsible for, you know, your integrity, your discipline, your actions, your follow through. And so, you know, for me, it's easier to control that. There have been some great players that have played the game too hard, too strategically, and they've gotten voted out and their, you know, creative arc and story has ended prematurely because they tried to do that. And there's other people that try to make moves behind the scenes and they make big moves, but then they get voted out anyway, or maybe other people make moves that overshadow their moves. And so for me, you know, that seems like a more risky way to play, but that's a very good point that they want to be remembered for making big moves. And there's, you know, then again, that's where I feel really fortunate. Listen, I talk a lot of bravado. I get on my high horse and talk about, you know, Boston Rob and Sandra. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm a very authentic person, and I'm so fortunate that that came out when I played Survivor, sometimes more than others. But I'm also really fortunate that there aren't a lot of people that are like me. It's funny because last night, you know, my father passed away 2 years ago, and my mom has moved up to where I live. And so I was going through these old boxes of papers that my mom had. And I was reading these letters. And when I was on that big 6 month kayak down to South America, I was sending them letters, you know, handwritten letters. And so there's one from the Bay Islands in Honduras. And I was reading this letter, and on the last paragraph, it says, you know, listen, mom and dad, I know that I'm different from you, but I still have a heart that is full of love and life. And, you know, I was basically trying to let them know that even though I was different, I'm still a human being. And so I've always been different. I've always been, you know, a little bit eclectic and different from other people. Again, I'm just glad that that was, you know, epitomized in the game of Survivor for millions of people to watch around the world.
Coach, I have a question for you from Costa, who wants to know, is there a maestro conducting the action of this season, or is it just a cacophony of noise?
At the moment, it's a cacophony of noise. We can look back on these early moments and say, ah, this person was orchestrating. You know, you remember back to Tony's first season, and Tony, you were just thinking, this is just a cacophony of moves that's going to blow up in his face. And he ended up winning the game. So I think, you know, then the second time he played, it was a disaster. But we really aren't going to know the answer to that question until we get, you know, knee deep 10 episodes in into the season. At the moment, it just seems like there are people that are steering the ship, but nobody has a stranglehold on the direction.
Coach, Rio Teixeira says, as one of only three Survivor players to play three times and never be involved in a tribe swap, how do you imagine yourself faring? What would your strategy be for handling the tribe swap?
Well, Rio, I have crossed my fingers that I would never go through a tribe swap, because I can hardly think of a more unsettling thing to happen on Survivor. But I think you got to just say in your mind, if the tribes are swapped, it's day one again. And even though the lines have been drawn in the sand, I think that you just go out there and you make yourself not aggressive. You just make yourself as real as possible, right? I mean, that's the most important thing for a guy like me to play. And just to say, here's who I am. You guys know me. Since you know where I'm coming from, it makes you easier to defeat me or know, you know, how to get me in the back. And so I'm vulnerable. And I think that in that vulnerability, there's power.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who the other two people are that never went through a tribe swap that have played three times.
That's a good trivia question.
It's a good question. I think Russell might be one. I think that Russell, I don't think that he's been through one. And I'd have to think. I have to think about it offline to get to the next one. Elizabeth Irwin wants to know, how do you grade Sandra and Boston Rob as coaches so far this season?
F minus. Come on, give me a break. They completely failed with Nora, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the fire making thing was one of the biggest charades I've ever seen on Survivor.
Yes.
So it's not their fault. It's not their fault. But I mean, I would say that they are not holding my attention. And, you know, when I've talked to other people about it, for the most part, and again, we might be in the minority, everybody else has said the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's pretty weird, isn't it? This doesn't seem to ring like Survivor true.
Coach, last week when Rob and Sandra were teaching Nora the lessons of persuasion, you popped up in one of the flashbacks where Sandra talked about starting a rumor where she told Russell a rumor about what you were doing. Were you happy that they showed a clip of you in that montage, or did you feel like that was not a clip that you wanted to see?
20 pounds lighter than my existing self, ripped, hair flowing down to my shoulders.
Yes.
I got to go back and watch that episode and take a selfie of that and
of the
say,
TV.
You see, for one second, every 10 years, coach is still relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
no, I really liked it. It was good. No, it was good, man.
It wasn't cool. Anything you did wrong. Yeah. It was Sandra started a rumor about you, and then she told it to Russell, and she said, you know, Russell is so stupid. So it really had nothing to do with you. It wasn't a negative clip on you.
No. I mean, here's the thing, right? How many clips could they have shown?
Yeah.
They could have shown a million different scenarios there. And they chose that one. I flippin' loved it, especially looking ripped like that on the beach. I mean, they could show a lot of clips of me looking foolish. So that was pretty good. I loved it.
Okay. Coach, Kevin Doherty wants to ask you about Nora's yoga class from the previous episode. How did that compare to Coach's Tai Chi?
No comparison.
No comparison.
No, when I did Tai Chi, even people were like, this is so lame. And at the end, wow, man, I actually feel something. Mm-hmm. I feel some synergy in my body. Even the haters were saying that.
Coach, Big Frankie asked this question. I saw you responded already about this on Twitter. Can you ask him to correct the spelling of husband in his profile bio? Hashtag please and thank you. On your bio, you call yourself a husband. And it seemed that that's bothering Big Frankie.
That's funny, actually. Actually, I've had a lot of people that have said that.
H-U-S-B-E-N.
Listen, here's the thing. It's funny. My wife's younger than me. She's younger, hotter. She's got more swag than I do, right? I sometimes lean on her cool factor. And so, you know, she said a long time ago, she sent it to me in a text. She was like, you're the best husband, H-U-S, and then my first name, B-E-N, instead of husband. I certainly know how to spell husband, but I put it on there just like a little play on words. I'm husband, and I'm a husband.
Yes.
So there you go. So I'm not going to change it. It's not a spell check error. It's a play on my name.
I thought you don't like when people call you by your first name. I thought you want to be Coach. Does your wife call you Coach?
Sometimes, in certain moments.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, here's the thing, right? Obviously, there's not a Huzz Coach. If there's a Huzz Coach, I throw that out there.
Yeah.
There's no words you can really put in Coach. And so, you know, it's just funny, right? Obviously, I don't like being called Ben.
Yes.
And obviously, more people in my life call me Coach than anything else.
Sure.
And a bunch of my students, actually, it's funny because a bunch of my students call me the Dragon Slayer. There's been a huge resurgence in Susanville among the 15 to 18 year olds watching old reruns of Survivor. And so, you know, people call me the Dragon Slayer, actually more than they call me Ben at the high school. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So. I'm not changing it.
About another tweet that you responded to, that Stephen Fishback had tweeted out, that he was looking for someone. He said, do you know a medieval times knight, or someone who might be able to connect me with a medieval times knight, or anybody who works at medieval times? And what did you respond to, Stephen? I am.
Two words that will get you out of a jam if you want to get put into the leadership position immediately.
Now, have you ever worked at a medieval times?
No, I thought it was asking about a medieval knight. If anybody out here was a medieval knight, and I can say that I definitely am a medieval knight. Oh, medieval times. Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Let's clarify.
Coach, Stephen Schultz wanted to ask you, you mentioned in Reno this year that you have one more season left in him, a legend season. Do you think that legend season will eventually materialize?
I think that a legend season is definitely going to materialize. But as I mentioned earlier, sometimes I feel like I've got one season left in me, and sometimes I feel like the game is going to pass me by because it's evolved so much over the years. So I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think a legend season is going to call. And I, you know, here's the deal, right? It's like the NBA draft. Oh, you know, I don't know if I can do this. And then, hello. Oh, Survivor, when are we leaving? Right? I mean, you can say as much as you want to. I want to go. I don't want to go. Whatever. But when that phone call happens, your heart stops, life changes, and it's on.
Yeah. It's hard to say no if they call you.
When they call Rob C., it'll be hard to say no.
It will be?
You'll be in the same boat as me, pal.
Mm-hmm. And what will we do?
I don't know, man. You'll probably stab me in the back 15 ways from Sunday, but hopefully you'll keep me around long enough where I can make another legendary run on my character arc, okay? Please.
Coach, this would be me. I would just be begging every single person, please don't vote me out.
I think there's going to be a little bit more brought to the table from the original gamer of this game. And that's you. I said that last time we talked, man, 100%. That's you. Anyway, hey, listen, man, I got to get to my class. They're literally, it's the next class and they're like all sitting out there looking at me through my doorway.
Yes,
so let's do a couple more and then I got to wrap it up.
Okay, you got it. This is from Stanky Mango Pulp on Twitter wants to know, do you think you could hide an idol in your hair, Coach?
I'm losing hair, man. I don't think I could do that anymore. Maybe once upon a time in 2009 I could have, but it's getting a little bald spot on the top, man. I don't think I could get it up there anymore. I could hide it in my package. I've got a rather large package. I could probably hide it in my package. I mean, did you see? Don't go back and watch some clips, man. Do you see how big of an area they got to blur when they're blurring me out? I'm just talking facts here, man.
When did they blur you?
Look at some of those. Please look at those some of those conversations that I had with Brandon or with Albert, and I'm walking down the trail. They literally have a huge section blurred out. That's your homework for this week. Thank you.
Okay.
Put up a screenshot of that.
I don't know. I don't know where to go from that, Coach. Where do you have a winner pick?
Come on, Jamal. Let's do it, man. Actually, I think Jamal and, I want Jamal to win. Let's go, Jamal. Let's do it all the way, baby.
Okay. Michael, if Rob and Sandra gave you an opportunity to be a guest speaker on the Island of the Idols, what would be the one lesson that you would teach to a castaway?
Please don't. Every time I played, when I return, please don't go and whore yourself out to all these reality things, like all the reality conventions and whatnot. That should not become your identity. After the show, retain your identity, run back to your real life as quick as possible and move on. Let it be a great adventure. Let it be a great chapter. But if it becomes your life and your identity, I think that'll steal something from your soul.
Okay, Coach. And would not be a zoetic thing to do, right?
There you go.
Okay, we'll try to bring it back. Okay, Coach, thank you for making some time. That I know, much like Rob and Sandra, that you are out there teaching students right now. So I appreciate you making some time to talk about all of this with us. And I know you were going 200 miles an hour today. We greatly appreciate you making some time to talk about all this stuff.
I hope it was worth it for you. Every time we talk, I feel like you get the best out of me, man. So I always look forward to these chats.
Okay. Coach is on Twitter. He is at @the_real_coach. That the same on Instagram also?
Dragon Slayer Coach on Instagram. I need to beef up my Instagram account. You know, I'm like, was on Twitter really big, and Instagram, I'm like trying to get it up there. So that one's Dragon Slayer Coach.
Okay. All right. Coach, thank you again, and all the best, buddy, okay?
Awesome, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. All right, buddy, there you have it. Coach Wade, and he's in between periods, made some time for us, so really appreciated anytime I get the chance to talk to Coach. Coach, coming in hot for season 39, and look, I appreciate the energy and the enthusiasm that he wants to come in here with, and I don't know if I agree with his takes on the season, but I do really love the energy that he comes in with. So lots of fun talking with Coach today. So we're going to go from here to our feedback show. Going to record that over the weekend with Kellen and see how Kellen is feeling about the season. Get your feedback questions in. It's always fun when we get more questions. Robiswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. Want to hear what you guys are thinking about the season. I also upload a tweet where you can also reply with your thoughts on or questions for Kellen for our feedback show. And then don't forget about the wand off. We've had some great wand off so far in this season. Looking forward to seeing what we come up with on episode number 5 on Monday. Plus, we'll have some new Robin Akivanita podcast over the weekend. Going to be watching Leprechaun 2. We watched Leprechaun 1 on Robin Akivanita podcast about a year ago. We'll be back with the very scary Leprechaun
2 coming up over the weekend as well, plus everything else that's going on in our wrap-ups feed with the Why Tom Lost and the B&B, the Purple Pants podcast, our challenge wrap-up, everything that's going on. Get it all at robhasawebsite.com. And of course, thanks to our patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. Going to have some patron podcasting coming up here over the weekend as well with a brand new patron 5 for 5 and Facebook Friday coming up here in the next 24 hours or so. All at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you guys so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.